Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Football Garbage Time NFL Podcast and our Scares and Dares episode, where we review our favorite horror movie scare of the week and give you the NFL player bets, or NFL bets generally, that we dare to make. And my name is Hakun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Football Garbage Time. And with me, as always, for our Fears and Dares episode, senior staff writer, Joanne Kong.
Hi, everyone.
All right, so we got plenty to talk about this week because our brackets are busted. There's nothing left to root for in March Madness.
Yeah, I should have known.
Who would have known? No, I mean, no one sees there, and heading into the Final Four, it looks to be a lot of deep seeds that we did not pick. So we can focus on football again and horror movies. So that's good for us, good for everybody. Our scare of the week this week is the 2020 movie Caveat, and we got plenty to talk about as we talk about our picks, our early pre-draft picks for AFC Division Champs. So, with that said, let's get things rolling. All right, as mentioned, our scare of the week this week, where we'll start, is the 2020 movie Caveat, streaming on Shudder and AMC+. This movie runs a brisk 1 hour and 28 minutes, and again, is directed by Damien McCarthy, produced by Justin Hype, written by Damien McCarthy, and was released on streaming in just June of 2021. So again, a brief 1 hour, a brisk 1 hour, 28 minutes. And as usual, we'll go through a little bit of background about the movie, tell you a little bit how we feel about it, give you our scare meter and our star rating, and then we'll move on from there. But a little bit of background first. So when a lone drifter with partial memory loss, Isaac, played by Jonathan French, accepts a job from his acquaintance and landlord, Moe Barrett, played by Ben Kaplan, to look after his landlord's niece, Olga, played by Leela Sykes, for a few days. It all seems like easy money to him, particularly since Olga is a grown woman. Moe brings Isaac to Olga, who lives on a remote island, and Isaac is informed that Olga will occasionally go catatonic with little to no warning, which can be very dangerous for her. So Isaac needs to make sure that she stays safe. And there's another significant caveat, and thus the meaning of the title of the movie. He must wear a leather harness and chain that restricts his movements to certain rooms. So this would be a hard pass for me right off the bat. I think you're right there, don't you think?
Yeah. Anyone that's going to say, like, you have to wear a leather harness attached to a chain,
yep.
I'm going to be like, there's not...
Yeah, ixnay.
Well, you know what? It depends on the amount. Like, it's almost like, I will give you $1 million to wear this leather harness and watch my niece for all... What was it, like?
It was like a couple days. I don't know. A few days,
right? Yeah. I mean, would you take $1 million and wear the harness?
No, hard pass. Hard pass. I'm sorry. The leather harness and the chain, not going to work for me. Anyway, so the point is that it restricts Isaac's ability to move around the house into certain rooms. Isaac learns from Mo that Olga's mother actually went missing after locking her husband in the basement, which is Olga's father, and Olga's father then went insane due to extreme claustrophobia and killed himself. At the house, Isaac also discovers that when lucid, Olga roams around with a crossbow and a strange toy rabbit with human-like glass eyes and a little drum. Once Mo leaves the two of them alone, a game of cat and mouse ensues as Olga displays continually worse psychological issues. With Isaac trapped and at the mercy of Olga, he begins to discover secrets in the house that coincide with the terrifying resurgence of his own lost memory. Okay, so lots to unpack there, but I don't want to go any further because there are a couple surprises in the movie, and there is a twist, of course, like there are often is in these movies. But let me just start by asking you, Joanne, what did you think of this movie, Caveat?
I liked it.
Yep.
I liked that it was fairly short,
mm-hmm.
and the movie really just kept moving. There wasn't really any lulls.
Right.
Because it went from you meeting the two characters.
Isaac and Olga? Or you're talking about Moe?
The guy that hired him and Isaac. And then he just goes immediately to the island. And then he tells them, you have to wear this harness.
Yeah.
And he's like, no.
Right.
But then, like, he dangles the money in front of him, right. And now he's put in a position because he offered it to him because he knows he needs the money.
Yes, right, right. And, right. And it's just to be clear, he is a drifter that has no memory. So
wasn't he in prison?
It's unclear if he was in jail or anything, but they just basically said he is a drifter.
Yes, but there is a caveat why he specifically asked him, not just because he needed the money, but there is another reason.
Of course.
But we're not going to give it away.
Part of the twist,
yeah.
Right?
But I mean, we're not going to give it away.
It seems random. And of course, it obviously will raise all sorts of suspicion that he's asking a random drifter with partial memory loss to go look after his niece in a remote island. That seems like a really bad idea all the way around, right?
Well, they said that they knew each other.
Right. He said he was an acquaintance.
Yes.
He said he was an acquaintance and also his landlord, apparently.
So they knew each other and he thought he could use the money.
But let's be honest, that you wouldn't ask an acquaintance and or your tenant to just randomly go to a remote island and look after your niece. I mean, that seems like a little bit of a heavy lift there.
We're saying that this niece is an adult.
Yes,
an adult. We're not asking him to watch a 5-year-old child.
Do you trust a renter who happens to have memory loss?
And therefore, the harness.
Okay, well, that seems like...
The harness prevented him from going into certain rooms, and one of them, which was hers.
Yeah, right, right. And the other thing, of course, is that she does continuously kind of get into this weird catatonic state,
right,
where she's just kind of sitting there,
right. And he asked him to do was just watch her, make sure she doesn't get into like any danger or anything like that,
right. Well, the fact that she wanders around with a crossbow does make me a little bit unsettled.
Well, you know, she's a good hunter.
Yes,
you live on an island,
and you might have to hunt something inside
you
your
just
house.
Don't know.
Inside your house, that's a little.
Well,
bit...
she's not wearing a harness. She could go out.
Yeah. Well, you know, so this all is amounting to a lot, but. That being said, I agree. I think the plot, obviously, very minimal, but still enough twist near the end of the movie. I really did enjoy the kind of controlled environment because it was really all inside that house on purpose. Kind of creates this growing sense of dread and claustrophobia, not unlike what Olga's dad supposedly went through before killing himself. So they really are trying to, in some ways, incite those feelings in the viewer that might have been significant to other aspects of the film early on and how they arrived at this point. I also think they did a great job of framing the scenes with darkness. They really did kind of focus your attention only directly ahead of you. They gave you zero peripheral vision, which I think was great because it helped them on a budget, because this was definitely a small budget movie, build a sense of dread because you can hear a lot, but you can't see it.
Right.
You can't see it. It's all off screen. Mm-hmm. And because they really do frame the scene in darkness, it's very difficult for you to get any peripheral vision. And of course, I would not be doing this movie justice without mentioning the toy rabbit, which was absolutely frightening. And I think that using that kind of electronic drum, and just so everyone knows, this is not giving anything away, when something is happening, the drum will just go off. They don't explain what it is
at
first, but the drum will just kind of go off. So it's almost like a detector of some kind, but the fact that you don't know.
She uses it that way, too.
Yeah. She holds it out in front of her as she walks around.
While she walks around, she's holding it, and then when it starts going off, that's when she stops.
Right. It kind of reminds me of the use on aliens of the alien detector. You can't see them, but you know they're getting closer.
Yeah.
You know, and it creates that sense of tension. That was the toy rabbit.
Yeah.
So that's basically the alien detector done cheap.
But also, like, the look of the rabbit, I really like.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It wasn't just, like, some fluffy,
no, it was pretty weird and ratty.
Rabbit,
I thought it was
like,
a rat.
It wasn't like the Energizer Bunny.
No,
rabbit.
Not at all.
Looked like a very old type of, like, voodoo type doll.
Yeah, it looked really ratty, like a rat.
It looked like a voodoo type doll, like made out of like human skin or something.
Well, I guess that would make it even freakier, but I don't think
rat
there's any.
Skin,
there's no
skin,
there's no way of actually knowing that
no,
for sure.
Yes, we don't know.
That's extra detail.
I think it's probably
not provided for in the movie. So with that said, let's. What did you like most and least about the movie?
That's funny because what we discussed. I liked the setting of the movie.
Yes.
And I liked the drumming rabbit.
Yes, absolutely. And what did you like least about the movie?
For me, I thought the predictability of it. There is a couple of twists, but I think you knew right off the bat who the villain was.
Kind of.
Well, I like watching just like the first couple of scenes.
Right.
you know, you, I kind of knew who the villain was going to be.
Well, there's multiple villains, really. I mean, there's different layers of villains,
there's
really.
There's layers of villains, but for this particular setting where this movie takes place.
Sure.
There's really one villain.
Okay.
I think there's okay. one villain.
All right.
And you just kind of, I don't want to use the word predictability, but I'm just going to keep going to that word.
Well,
because
I think it's because the plot was so simple.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was not many characters, just four total characters.
Right. But like, I mean, like every, like you said, there are like twists in this movie, but
yes.
even with the twist,
right.
like, you know, like who's being taken advantage of, and you kind of know who is the, you know, the manipulator.
Right. So I agree with you. What I like most, of course, is the framing and the scenes and the building of tension. And what I like least is the fact that it was very straightforward. I mean, there was, like I said, there are twists in the movie, which I think developed
there
the
are.
Plot quite
yes.
nicely.
Yeah.
But very limited characters. It actually set up like almost like a stage play in many
ways. It could have
right?
been. It definitely could have been,
right.
yeah.
All right, so give it a scare-o-meter, 0 to 10, 10 being, oh my goodness, I just pooped my pants, and 0 being, what was that, a Disney film?
A 1.
A 1?
A 1, yeah.
What? You was 1 on the scare-o-meter?
I did. I didn't think it was potential. I didn't think it was really that scary.
Oh,
like,
man.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, what would I do? And I'm like, maybe a 2, I don't know, but I'm gonna stay with a 1, because, like, yes, the setting was great. I don't know how scary I would say it was. But, like, my version of scary, I think, is different than your version of scary.
Yeah, because I'm giving it a 5 because I think that the tension that's built is really well done. It's incremental, mm-hmm. and it builds upon itself. And the mystery is kind of built around that tension. And I think you kind of get a little bit of anxiety over the tension that they build on there through the setting. And the fact that he knows that our protagonist can't get away. I mean, he literally cannot get away. So I think there
yeah.
is an element
our,
of like
element just, of horror. I think is
okay.
Is
well,
scary
I think that's scary.
Different.
And there was a hand. No. There was a small handful of jump scares as well.
All right.
I don't
so okay.
That.
So I'll bump it to a 2.
Okay, well,
I'll bump it to a 2.
All right. Fair enough. All right. So you got a 2. I got a 5. Tell us. So Rotten Tomatoes. They gave it on the tomato meter an 82%. Really well done with 49 reviews. Their critics' consensus is an effective spine tingler despite clear budget constraints. Caveat suggests a deliciously dark filmmaking future for writer-director Damien McCarthy. And it has an audience score, surprisingly, a little bit lower at just 50%.
Yeah.
So give us your star rating here.
I'm going to give it a 2.5.
Okay. That's not bad.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I saw that audience review, and I think it is because you go into it with maybe one expectation and
yep.
you come out with it with another.
Right.
And I think when someone titles something horror, it's we've learned horror has a very broad spectrum.
Right.
And I think that's why the reviews came out as it is.
Well,
I think it is a better than average movie.
Right.
Like for any genre, if whether you want to say
particularly
it's
on a shoestring
or
budget,
thriller,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. The acting, I thought the acting was really well done.
Yep.
You know, for the budget that they had, they found a great setting.
I did.
And prop wise, with the bunny, really like drove it home.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I gave it 3 out of 4 stars, so I know it's slightly a little bit higher. I really enjoyed it. I think it blended some genres together. It kind of crossed this kind of supernatural story with the conspiracy drama thriller. So I think that they did an effective job of combining those two things with very minimal resources, very minimal budget, very minimal acting.
But one of the things was is that like they didn't have the time, but like it was never explained. Like it was their supernatural type deal. And they did explain it a little. I remember.
They certainly addressed all this stuff. Right.
But not true answers.
Well, I say light is light on story, but very heavy on atmosphere. I really enjoyed the atmosphere. So I gave it a 3 out of 4. All right. Well, that is what we have for Caveat, the 2020 horror mystery thriller, which is streaming on Shudder and AMC+. You can go ahead and stream it there, and I think it's worth a stream.
I definitely do.
All right. Let's go ahead and hit the boxing bell on this part of the show and move on to the next part of the show, which is the NFL bets that we dare to make for early pre-draft AFC division champions in the 2023 season. And, of course, I will say that again, our own caveat that this is the early pre-draft picks,
yes.
right? Obviously, things can change. after the draft, but we've been through a significant amount of free agency now and, of course, franchise tags, and we have an idea of what these teams look like. So obviously
a small idea.
Right. But the odds that have been provided by the bookmakers support that. You know, obviously we have little information, but we obviously may change this after the draft. So we will be back after that. But, you know, if you want to make a bet now, as we are, then here are our picks for the AFC division winners. And we're going to start first with the AFC North. So who do you got there?
So this is interesting for me because, you know, we discussed this a little beforehand.
Yep.
And the problem with, you know, these preseason, I think, pre-draft or preseason, pre-contract, whatever you want to call it, pick.
Definitely pre-draft.
Is that you just do not know what the final team is going to look like.
Of course not.
So for me, the AFC North, probably for you too, I really wanted to pick the Baltimore Ravens for the AFC North at plus 220.
Yep.
And really, I wanted to pick the Ravens, and only if Lamar Jackson remains a Baltimore Raven.
Right. And right now we know he's franchise tagged, non-exclusive, but he's shopping around.
Right. So this bet all hinges on Lamar Jackson, because if Lamar Jackson is not going to be a Raven, then I would have to go with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay. All right. But you are right now, though, going with.
We're going to say that Lamar Jackson, they're going to negotiate a contract, because I really don't know what the Ravens would do.
Or they'll play, or he'll play on the franchise tag.
You know,
right?
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do, but that he is going to stay with the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
And if he does stay with the Baltimore Ravens, I think that they could win. They could be number one in the division. Why?
Okay. All right.
Because Lamar Jackson was injured last season. I mean,
yes.
He played like 12 out of 16 games.
Yep.
So, and they were only two games behind of the Cincinnati Bengals when the season ended. So what would have happened if Lamar Jackson was healthy and he played every single game?
Yeah.
I think that there's a good chance the Baltimore Ravens would have sat on top.
Yep.
So that is why I'm going to pick the Baltimore Ravens for this game.
Okay. All right. So there you're saying that the AFC North winner, now, just as everybody is well-oriented, the Bengals are the odds-on favorite at plus 135, Baltimore Ravens at plus 220, the Browns at plus 380, and the Pittsburgh Steelers bringing up the rear at plus 600. You got the Baltimore Ravens at plus 220. I got the Bengals at plus 135.
Yeah.
So first of all, I don't think anything changes this at this point of the year, or the preseason, of the pre-draft process, that changes my view that the Bengals are going to be the most dangerous team in the AFC.
You know, and the thing with the Bengals is that since, you know, their quarterback has been there,
Joe Burrow. Yeah.
I mean, they have won the last two out of the three seasons sitting at number one, and that's really because Joe Burrow's rookie year, he got injured, and so he didn't play.
Of course. Or not all of it, at least.
Yeah. But, like, so I understand, and that's why I had a hard time between these two teams.
Sure.
And the Bengals, definitely very strong, but I don't see that the Ravens are that much weaker.
Yeah, I know, and I don't totally disagree with that, but I will say that in terms of offense, the Bengals just have way more weapons. Because I mean, they have Joe Burrow, they have Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, they have Tyler Boyd, they have Joe Mixon, and they just signed left tackle Orlando Brown to a four-year, $64 million deal. You know, Burrow was running for his life two seasons ago, and he made it work. He managed to take less sacks last season and less QB hits and QB hurries by speeding up his delivery from snap to throw, and that worked very well for him. But with Brown coming in, I can only imagine how much better Burrow can be if he has a solid left tackle and time in the pocket for his receivers to get downfield, for him to diagnose defenses more. I mean, you can't ask for better weapons than Chase, Higgins, Mixon, and Boyd. And, you know, you flip it over to the Ravens, and like, who do you have there? You know, we don't really have a lot.
I agree, but, like, they still have time to really fix it up because they still have free agency pickups. They have the draft coming up.
Of course.
I mean, they can really get those, like, skilled players that they need.
And who knows? They may be able to get in the draft, but I'm just saying, just based on what we know today and free agency, and the Bengals also fixed their defense because they were a surprisingly solid secondary, a surprisingly solid defense during the regular season and the playoffs. They really stepped up in the playoffs. And they added safeties Jesse Bates, the third, for a four-year, $64 million deal, and Von Bell for a three-year, $22.5 million deal. That should shore up an already just darn right rock-solid secondary. And I just feel like they're really building in all the right places. The Browns and Steelers, like I said, huge question marks.
Oh,
subpar
yeah.
2022 season. I would never bet on them. Ravens, I guess. I would agree with you if Lamar Jackson's coming back, but like I said, currently franchise tag, seeking other opportunities. He's unhappy with them.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen there. But even if he plays, I still feel confident in the Bengals.
I'm going to say, like, if he remains there and they really build that team, depending on what they do. I mean, they've been very quiet right now with the pickups because they've been trying to negotiate this contract
of course,
right now.
Right.
And so you just don't know. Like you said, like the Bengals were a dominant team last season, and the Ravens were only two games shy of being number one. I mean, like, you know, like that has to tell me. And they had, like, practically no one last year as well.
That's very true.
So I think, like, Jackson is a key component to the Ravens. And
yep.
if he's not there, then yes. Cincinnati, they are going to just, like, take this division home.
Right.
But, you know, and on a side note, if I had to knock one team out, it would have to be the Cleveland Browns because I just don't want to see Deshaun Watson succeed.
And I don't know if he will anyway. I don't even know that's a problem.
I'm waiting for him to fall on his butt.
Well, he's going
to
write out
his
super overpaid guaranteed contract and we'll see where it goes. All right, let's hit the boxing bell on that. Let's go to the next division, the AFC East. So just to give everyone a little bit of orientation here, the AFC East has the Buffalo Bills as the odds-on favorite at plus 125, New York Jets at plus 230, Miami Dolphins at plus 370, and the New England Patriots bring up the rear at plus 700. Who do you have as the AFC East division winner pick?
You know, this division is really interesting to me because of the potential, you know, intro to Aaron Rodgers in the Jets.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that makes it very interesting. Not that, in all honesty, even if Aaron Rodgers gets to the Jets, I don't think they're going to win the division. But mm-hmm. I just think the division with these teams is just something that I am very interested in watching.
It's fascinating.
Year. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's just because of how Tua did last year.
Yep.
And I'm just, like, dying to see what the Patriots do this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, so far they say Mac Jones is still going to be their starter.
Yep.
But, I mean, like, the Patriots have been just, like, two steps behind since Tom Brady left.
Well, no surprise there,
and,
obviously.
And, you know, and honestly, like, Mac Jones is not the answer if they're going to stick with
after
him.
After the first year, it looked like he might be. After the second year, not so much.
Good for him, but, like, yeah. So, obviously, my pick is going to be the Buffalo Bills.
Okay.
The Buffalo Bills, they finished, you know, the last three seasons first in the division
mm-hmm.
with Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And last year they finished with a 13-3 record. No team came even close to that.
Yep.
Even with like all the injuries they had in the, you know, the later part of the season, they like the team still could just not keep up.
Right.
So I have to say, like, you know, even though, like, you know, the Buffalo Bills, you know, the biggest loss for them was their defensive coordinator. He's taking off a year.
Yep.
And their linebacker also.
Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah, he went to the Bears.
Yes, he did.
But, I mean, like, they could find plugins for, you know, like, for Edmonds. So I don't see that being that much of a problem.
Okay.
But, like, the team is still the team. You know, if you talk about how Cincinnati is still the team, like, the Bills, they're still the Bills. They have their skilled players for the most part. I think Singletary has left.
Yep.
But that's something that they could, like, pick up either in, you know, free agency or the draft.
Yeah, and
if they
running
want to backs
are very deep this year in the draft.
So
they can pick one late.
I don't see how any of these other teams could really just compete with the Bills.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would – so you're taking the Bills, obviously.
I am. I'm going to take the Bills.
At plus 125. And I'm going to take a bigger swing than that. I'm going to take the Dolphins at plus 370s, because I think they looked unstoppable when Tua was healthy, perhaps in part due to the acquisition of Tyreek Hill, the pair of Jalen Waddle, and they signed slot receiver Braxton Berrios from the Jets in the offseason, which gives Tua yet another target, as well as giving the Dolphins a solid punt and kick returner, and of course Braxton Berrios heading home, playing in Miami before, so now obviously back in his hometown. I think that's a great place for him, and I think that's a great supplement to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So I think the Dolphins are firing at all cylinders on offense, and their running back room comes back as it did before. Raheem Mostert, Jeff Wilson, Miles Gaskins was re-signed, and so was Salvin Ahmed. So there is plenty of room there with the running backs. Interestingly, Mostert and Wilson coming from the 49ers, so they basically just took the 49ers running back room, because the 49ers didn't need them anymore after getting Christian McCaffrey. But that being said, I think the Dolphins are well positioned in terms of their offense. And on defense, they have an absolutely deadly pass rush with Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, Emmanuel Ogba, Malik Reed, and Andrew Von Ginkel. All those guys are starters in any team. Together in that rotation, they are going to give, they're going to have fits on the other side of the ball there in terms of quarterbacks. It's just going to be amazing in terms of the amount of pressure that the Dolphins will be able to put on opposing pass catchers, including Josh Allen. And the Bills, you know, I don't disagree. They're probably the most likely to take the division, but at plus 125 payout, I think that's pretty low. And the Jets are still figuring out how to trade for Aaron Rodgers, as you mentioned. Yeah. I don't know if he'll get done or not. They obviously don't have another option at this point. I'm not ready to take them at plus 230 yet. I just don't think that's a good enough payout for the uncertainty. But if you're looking, you know, if you're looking to speculate, I don't mind throwing a few dollars that way, but I certainly don't think he's there on my number one pick. And regardless, I think the Dolphins are as likely to win the division as the Jets, even if they get Aaron Rodgers. So I prefer to take the plus 370 payout than the plus 230 to take the Jets. So I don't disagree with the Bills pick. I just like the payout of plus 370. And I think that the Dolphins, if Tua stays healthy, can be quite a force to be reckoned with, both on offense and now on defense, with what they've signed in their linebacker corps.
You know, it's interesting because I think you picked Miami last year too.
Yeah, and I was wrong.
You were wrong.
But Tua was injured. And that's what I'm saying. If Tua stays healthy, I think things can be
different.
And
I think that's one of the funny parts, because when they said that Lamar Jackson was up for grabs, Miami was one of the first teams to be like,
maybe.
Hey.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think that, you know, that they, yes, Tua has flashes. He did a great job last season. I think he took like a huge leap forward.
Absolutely.
But I just don't think, and I understand what you're saying about the defense, but like, you know, Buffalo also has a good defense if everyone stays healthy,
right? Of course.
I mean, and so you're talking about like apples and apples. It's really hard to compare these two teams, except the Buffalo Bills has a better quarterback.
Yeah, but the payout is so much better.
And they're fixing
plus 370 against plus 125.
The Buffalo Bills are fixing their, you know, offensive line. They got Connor McGovern. I mean, like, you know, they're trying to create that line for the better run game, for the better, you know, Josh Allen game.
Yeah.
And I think those things, like, it just adds to why the Buffalo Bills are a better pick, because, yes, it is it's a lesser payout, but it will pay out.
But I still think that I'd rather take a slightly bigger chance and get a better payout, because I'm going to make 2.5 times more money if Dolphins win.
Yeah.
And so I like that combo. It's that combo.
You like the Dolphins every year.
And I'm wrong every year. I know I'm wrong every year. All right. So let's move on. Let's hit the boxing bell on that one and move on to our next division, and that is the AFC West. I think this is going to be the easiest one of them all. Who do you have to
pick? I think we both agree that the AFC West has to be the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes, and just to orient everybody, the Kansas City Chiefs are at a miserable minus 155.
Yeah, I feel like you're getting like pennies, but
right.
I mean, you pick any other team and you might as well just be throwing your money out the window, because
totally
there's
agree.
Just no chance. I mean, at least Miami does have a chance. You know, Cincinnati, Ravens, they have a chance depending
right.
on what their team looks like. But, like, against the Chiefs, come on, the last 7 years, the Chiefs were number one in their division.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, they didn't need Tyreek Hill. So.
No.
And you know, I think that's crazy. You know, I was very tempted to take lots of the Chargers at plus 350. But I just, you know, Justin Herbert has not in any way given me any confidence.
He has taken such a step back last season.
Right.
I don't know what happened to him.
And I don't have any confidence that it's coming back. And, of course, there's some talk about Austin Eckler wanting to leave. So, I mean, if Austin Eckler leaves, then the Chargers are down one of their star players, and I really have no confidence in what they can do. Broncos I've written off for sure. The Raiders the Broncos at plus 460, that's just throwing money away. Even though Sean Payton is now there, I just think that there's no way he turns his team around in one year.
No, not in 1 year.
No.
Definitely. I mean, they have so much building to do. I just don't see, you know, it happening.
And the Las Vegas Raiders at plus 1,300. What a great payout. But
great payout, yes.
Jimmy G?
Yes. I was actually very tempted to put some money on that. Not
So if you're speculating, throw a couple bucks that way at plus 1,300.
But, like, the fact that, like, Garoppolo gets injured every year, I mean, it is just a shame.
Right.
Like, his, like, it's unfortunate that, you know, his body just can't cash, like, what.
The checks he's writing. But, you know, there's a thing, though. I just don't understand. I mean, is he really better than Derek Carr? I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's absolutely it. You know, I don't think that's.
That's a really interesting thing because I don't really think he is.
I don't think so either.
I don't think he is. And we always say this. If you put the right person in with the right team, it is like a lockstep type of match.
Sure.
They just excel. And I have to wonder if, you know, like Derek Carr just fit into the system, you know, with the Raiders.
He might. And we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens with Derek Carr this season. And, of course, the Las Vegas Raiders starting anew, Jimmy G. And, I mean, they still have Davante Adams, and they still have the league's rushing leader, Josh Jacobs. So we'll see what they do there. But
face it, like, their offensive line was terrible. Yeah, no wonder, like, Derek Carr couldn't do anything.
They're just that's not going to win the division with the Chiefs there. All right, so let's go ahead and hit the boxing bell and go to the last division in AFC. That was easy, yes. And it gets us to the AFC South. So the AFC South. So the Jaguars leading the way at minus 145, the Titans at plus 280, Colts at plus 650, and the Texans bringing up the rear at plus 850. All right, who do you have winning the AFC South?
You know, this one we also discussed.
Yes.
And it was between the Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans, and we both agreed that it would be a coin flip.
Yeah.
Because for me, you know, I would want to pick the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Ryan Tannehill could get him there.
Right.
I mean, I hate to say it because, like, he just did so well, you know, before last season, like in previous seasons.
Right.
But, like, last season, I don't know what it is that he just took, like.
Let's take a step back. But hey, part of it, I mean, it's A.J. Brown wasn't there. That's probably part of it, you know? I mean, they thought that Treylon Burks was going to be an automatic one-for-one, and he wasn't.
And I think that's the big problem because when you say that something like that, right, and then you look at, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, and you see what Patrick Mahomes does, regardless of what receiver is out there.
Well, but that's a totally different level of quarterback, right?
It is a different level of quarterback. But, you know, it can't just be the skilled players, right? Mm-hmm. It has to be your quarterback being able to make something happen as well.
Yeah, and Tannehill's not that guy.
Yeah.
But look at what A.J. Brown did for the Eagles. I mean, it catapulted them from nobody to Super Bowl, almost Super Bowl champions.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously one guy can make a difference, and that guy was on the Tennessee Titans.
Yes, and everyone figured it out towards the later half of the season.
Right.
So they really shut him down.
Right. But that being said, you know, the Titans are down a target. So who do you have here? Do you have
I did take the Tennessee Titans just because of the
uncertainty of the Jaguars.
Yes, and the odds. I mean,
what
we discussed, it was totally correct. Like, the Jaguars are a really young team.
Yes.
And they did really well last season.
They exceeded expectations,
yes,
for sure.
And, you know, I was so surprised that, like, Trevor Lawrence, you know, last year.
Yep.
Because, you know, I'm not a big fan.
No.
You know,
And how could you be unless you're a Clemson person, right?
I want to stay impartial for every player, but there are players I like and players I don't like.
Sure.
And Trevor Lawrence is just a player I don't like.
Right.
When I see his face, I just want to smush it in the ground.
Okay.
So...
A little bit violent, but okay.
So, like, I see that, and I'm like, I don't want it to succeed. But, like, he just did, I mean, not every game, because he is just so inconsistent. But there were days when I was just like, whoa, like, that is not the Trevor Lawrence I know.
Right. He has had flashes, but I think there is an inconsistency there. And so you're taking the Titans at plus 280.
I mean, just for the odds.
Yeah, because the Jaguars at minus 145 is pathetic. I mean, the fact of the matter is you could pick the Chiefs at minus 155 to win the AFC West. Why would you put money on the Jaguars at minus 145?
And in all honesty, although we don't know what the quarterback situation looks like, I mean, the Titans are really trying to, like, really improve their team, you know, with defense and the offense, you know, the offensive line and everything, and which they really need a lot of help in. Like, their offensive line was terrible last year.
But I think they're taking some steps forward here,
because
they did sign Andre Dillard, the offensive tackle, 3 years, $29 million. That should help. He should slide in as left tackle there. Mm-hmm. That's helpful to both Tannehill and Derrick Henry.
Yes.
Of course, King Henry still there. And let's not forget that Malik Willis was – you know, in many books, the number one quarterback of the draft last year. He slid, and he managed to get him on a song in the third round. And he's been backing up Ryan Tannehill. Everyone knew that Malik Willis could not start right away, that he needed time in order to learn the system and get used to the pro system that they played there. This is a year later. I think there's some potential here of Malik Willis stepping in and Treylon Burks actually having some sort of chemistry with him.
I'm very curious to see what, you know, Malik Willis is going to look like on the field. I mean, because what we saw the few times last, it was not that impressive.
Well, and he was arguably, he wasn't ready for those.
Right, exactly.
I mean, those were spot starts. Those were because out of necessity.
Yes.
So they kind of put him in there, and it's a great learning opportunity. I don't think we saw the real Malik Willis on the field yet. And I think that there's some potential for upside there. And, of course, on defense, they signed Sean Murphy Bunting at cornerback and Arden Key at linebacker as well. Both should really shore up a solid defense from last year. So I think there's some potential.
Also struggling a little
last year. But I think that also, they're getting people at the right places. And quite frankly, as we said, the Colts and Texans, they have basically little chance to vie for the division, both undergoing major rebuilds.
Yeah.
Jacksonville, I think we'll be close, but I still think, as you say, Lawrence hasn't proven to me that he can be consistent from game to game.
I'm just very curious to see, like, what happens to him this year. Like, does it take another step forward? Does it take a step back? Because we've seen that.
Or is he just going to be Trevor Lawrence like he was last year?
Right.
You know, and that may be good enough in some respects, but I don't think it's something I would want to bet on.
I mean, I don't know if it will be good enough if he's Trevor Lawrence from last year.
Well, you know, I certainly don't think it's worth the piddly return of -145. That's what I think. That payout does not fairly represent the odds for the Jaguars, so I'd rather take the +280 on the Titans. I agree with you there. And that brings us to the end of the show, so let's hit the air horn on the show there. All right, so we did. We made it all the way through. Next time we'll cover the NFC side of things. So, Joanne, give us your social media so people can follow you.
It's at Kung Fu for You on Twitter.
All right, give her a follow and let her know what you think of her picks. Obviously, that is a great way to feedback to us if you disagree or agree. Actually, I prefer if you agree. But either way, totally fine with us. As usual, thank you for listening and wasting time with us. As I said, we'll be back next time with our picks for the NFC Division Champs pre-draft, and of course we'll be back after the draft. We'll pick after the draft to tell you how those have changed, and of course I think the odds will be changing at that time as well. So until then, watch those horror movie scares, make those NFL bet dares, and enjoy your NFL week.
Good luck, everyone.